To what end would you go to avoid looking foolish? Most of us would go to any end to avoid that red-faced, flush, wanting to run and hide feeling that engulfs your body when you sense that you've been made a fool. We would do almost anything to avoid embarrassment. It's one of the most uncomfortable feelings on earth. Not only does the feeling foolish have an immediate physical reaction toward flight, often it's accompanied by the fight reaction. We immediately begin to find someone or something to blame for whatever that has happened to make us feel foolish. We search for the cause of that which has embarrassed us. It's happened to us all. And I feel certain that if I polled everyone here, you could tell me vividly the last time which you felt foolish. You might not want to share what happened in the event that you would feel foolish once again, but you can remember that feeling like it was just yesterday. For all I know, it might have just been yesterday, but whether it was yesterday or 30 years ago, feeling foolish sticks out, and not in the way that we would attribute as good or positive. Foolish, according to the American Heritage Dictionary of the English language, is defined as lacking or exhibiting a lack of good sense, or resulting from stupidity or misinformation. Words that are synonymous with foolish include silly, absurd, preposterous, ridiculous, ludicrous. I personally can relate better to the synonyms than I can the definition. There are many times that I have felt downright foolish for tripping over my own feet, for example, which really had nothing to do with good sense or stupidity, but more with just not paying attention, which perhaps could show my exhibiting a lack of good sense. One definition of foolish, or actually fool, was noted in the informal definition as a person who has a talent or excitement for something. That made me think of a friend who used to say to me, "It's time to go be fools for Jesus." I think I like that definition best. There's quite a difference in choosing to be foolish and being made a fool of. Choosing to be a fool means being willing to be vulnerable, to take the risk of having people laugh at you, of not taking yourself too seriously. Being made a fool of may be the result of taking yourself too seriously. Foolishness is always easier when it's chosen, rather than having it come at you by surprise. Paul rhetorically asked the people of Corinth, "Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God the world did not know God through wisdom, God decided through the foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe." And that which we proclaim does sound like foolishness to those who have yet to experience the love of God. Have you ever had a conversation with someone who does not believe in God? Have you ever tried to explain your faith to an unbeliever? I hope you have, and I hope you continue to do so. If you have, you know that it's very difficult to explain your faith to someone who does not believe. People who are convinced that there is no God, or that God is very much removed from the world, can come up with all sorts of convincing arguments to support their lack of faith or belief. And faith is something that is impossible to support with factual proof. If faith had a proof text, then it wouldn't be faith at all. Still in all, a person trying to explain why she or he believes in God and knows that God exists and that Jesus was made man as God, was crucified and resurrected, and through that has saved us all from our sins, a person trying to explain that sort of faith can sound downright foolish. Perhaps that's why we Episcopalians are so good at not sharing our faith. God knows we wouldn't want to sound foolish. The last line in the reading from Corinthians is the real kicker. For God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. Have you ever imagined God being foolish? Foolish is not an attribute that I think is often linked with God. But if you think through God's relationship with his creation, you can see where God did some pretty foolish things. Things like reaching out to us over and over and over again. People who've had faith in God and have trusted that God would do what God said he would do also have appeared to be pretty foolish. It must have appeared foolish to the Egyptians when a ragtag bunch of Hebrews took off after Moses through a desert. There was no way they could survive going across that desert. It must have looked pretty foolish to that ragtag bunch of Hebrews when they asked for water and Moses lifted up his staff and hit a rock. It certainly looked foolish when Noah started building that giant boat. Abraham had to look foolish when he just took off. And then there was that time when God asked him to sacrifice his only son, the very one that God had promised him. And Sarah laughed when God said that she would have a child, and it ended up with some serious egg on her face. David, King David, was noted to have looked foolish when he paraded around half naked in the dance for God. I could go on and on, and we haven't even gotten to the foolishness of the New Testament yet. God showed his foolishness over and over again, and the people who trusted him and followed him did too. Foolish God for trusting a young girl to be the God-bearer, the mother of God. Foolish God to take the form of one of us. Foolish God to love us so much. Foolish disciples to leave everything and follow Jesus. Foolish blind man to think that he could be made whole. Foolish Syrophoenician woman to think that this Jewish male healer would heal her Gentile daughter. Foolish Zacchaeus climbing into a tree. Foolish Jesus for trusting Judas. Foolish Judas for turning him over. Foolish Pilate for not taking a stand. Foolish God for letting his own son be crucified. Foolish Jesus for loving us so much that he would lay down his life for us. God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom. We think we know so much. We think we have God all figured out. So did the people who were around Jesus. He went up to Jerusalem, and he found that in the temple, people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and money changers seated at their tables. Just for the record, the folks selling cattle, sheep, and doves were doing the good pilgrims who had come to Jerusalem for Passover for a service. They were doing a good thing. They were providing a service for the pilgrims. Or so they thought. Folks had come from all over the place, and it was just too difficult to drag those animals along with you for a sacrifice. It was just much simpler to buy them when you got there. Furthermore, if you bought them outside the temple, you could be assured that they were the quality required for an appropriate sacrifice. The money changers were providing a service as well. It was against the laws for Jews to have their money with the image of the Roman emperor on it, or anyone else for that matter. But while they were at the temple, they had to pay their taxes to the Roman government. And it had to be paid in Roman currency. So the money changers were there to assist them in making that transfer. Perhaps they were charging a sizable transfer rate. Either way, we can be fairly certain that no one there thought anyone was doing anything inappropriate. They were all providing services. It was just a convenience. foolish people. And Jesus certainly looked foolish to them when he began knocking all the tables over and feeding all the sacrificial animals. He was not going to get out of this unscathed. This, by all appearances, was the most foolish thing to do. God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom. It had already been noted in the Psalms that God takes no pleasure in burnt offerings, that the appropriate offering to God is a contrite heart. But the people didn't understand that. They're so busy getting the worship right that they seem to forget what the right worship is. The interchange that follows this disruption of business as usual seems even more foolish than anything that has gone before. Jesus says, "Destroy this temple and I will build it up, raise it up in 3 days." Thinking with their foolish human minds, the people respond, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years and you're going to raise it up in 3 days? Who do you think you are?" But Jesus wasn't talking about the building. He was speaking of the temple of his body. After he was resurrected, the disciples remembered what he had said. And then they believed, we are told. In human terms, following Jesus sounds foolish. He calls us to do radical things, to live in ways that sound downright foolish. He calls us to trust, to believe, to follow. He calls us more than anything to love. To love God, to love each other, to love ourselves. He calls us to give up what we think is wisdom and trust the foolish wisdom of God. The foolish wisdom of a God that loves us so much that he gave his life for us, that he became one of us, and loves us to the end. God has become a fool for us, and we are called to be fools for him. In order to become fools for God, we must give up our so-called wisdom, our safety, our security, our need to be right, our need to have standing in the eyes of other people. We must be willing to let go of pride and arrogance and safety and standing and appearances and all the things that make us valuable in the eyes of the world. We must become vulnerable and open and willing to risk being thought of as foolish. There's not a thing we can do to become more valuable to God. There is not a thing we can do to be more loved by God. But there is much we can do to become more valuable and loving toward each other. Don't be foolish for God.